Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I'm deeply grateful you chose to be with me. This radio program, this satsang, is for December the 2nd, 2016. Wow, getting close to the end of the year here. It's coming. Christmas, everything. How are you? How are you doing? Are you excited, or are you a bah humbug, or what are you in between? A lot of people are in between. Very grateful you chose to be with me on this beautiful Friday. I want to remind you, as I always do, how grateful I am that my sponsors make all of this possible. It's only through their contributions, their loving kindness, that you and I are able to be together in this format on radio. And I hope that you will show your appreciation by becoming a sponsor and helping us sustain our radio program. Yes, it needs sustaining just like anything else. And most people, yes, they do ignore it, but that's just the way people are. But when it comes down to realizing the essence of your heart and how important this radio program is to so many people who I hear from constantly, I think you'll understand exactly what we're trying to do here. Offer the alternative to conventional hate and fear and anger, and maybe show a sense of kindness, at least some tolerance and compassion. So if you're interested in sharing this radio program, our TV program, or any of the messages and things that I offer on the website at aspire.org, please remember, these are crucial things that are only supported through your tax-deductible gifts. And when you become a sponsor, you sustain this and help many, many people more than you would ever imagine. And I am grateful for the service to humankind and your support. I get questions from time to time like this. They are very interesting to me because they are about trying to weasel out of discipline and inner experience, inner awakening. So when I offer these things to people, like meditation, practice work, little things that I offer in my commentaries and in the breath journal, where I actually say, this is the steps you take to awaken here and work on that, people often shy away, or they don't want to be disciplined. And then it's considered, the whole idea of spirituality is considered unnatural. So I have some beautiful questions here from three people who were brave enough in the last 4 months to offer these questions. And I hope that maybe one of them will help. Maybe one of my answers, I should say, will help. But even more importantly, maybe you've thought the same thing and one of my answers might help. First one comes from John. And he just says he listens to us from back east, wherever that is, where the star shines. I don't know. I struggle with my mind, John says. I can't get it to become still. Is spiritual practice really natural? It doesn't seem so, John. Is spiritual practice natural? You're probably questioning it because you can't discipline your mind to get quiet, as you say here. It is the nature of the mind to be noisy. It is the nature of the mind to be in exact proportion to my gratifications, how I used my gratifications to cover up my pain, my misery, my sorrow. That's what the difficulty is, John. It isn't that the mind can't become still or quieter. It is that I have fed it through my emotionality all of the kind of pain and sorrow that I could, and then tried to cover it up with, various forms of entertainment, sports, gratification. You could use food, you could use alcohol, you could use drugs. There are so many things you could use to make that mind, feel satisfied and to, so to speak, appease it And if I do that, I'm really appeasing my emotionality through my body. I start to develop within myself this wall between myself, my depth, my clarity, and I make a wall that is what we often call in the work hardness of heart. And in this hardness of heart and this wall that I create, it makes it virtually impossible for me to quiet the mind because it has all this chatter going on all the time because I fed it. And it's like a little puppy dog. It learns that the more it chatters, the more you feed it to get it quiet or to get a conversation going on with it that seems comfortable. I'm going to give you the way out of this, okay? It's nothing new, nothing you haven't heard before, but it really does work. First thing, you have to learn how, when you're not meditating, not to have conversations with your mind. If you have conversations with your thinking, if you go back and forth with your mind and start talking to it, it will seem to become another person inside you. You will think that it's you. You will assign a meaning, a value to it and say, oh, that in my case, that's Greg. And I'll start talking to Greg. And then Greg will start talking to me. And then if I don't like the conversation, I will say, oh, I'm hungry, or oh, I need to go watch TV, or oh, when is the next game, or oh, what can I do to pleasure myself in some way? It could be anything that I want to do to avoid. So the first thing you need to understand is these come from depths of emotionality. This conversation is happening because I'm talking to it. I'm treating it like it is a person, a thing, an entity. And this entity becomes my enemy. And then I have real problems getting still and quiet. The next thing, you have to learn to watch your breath. When you're doing anything, even outside of meditation, it's good every so often during the day, 10, 20 times a day, just to watch your breath. Sitting quietly, doing your work, but while you're working, watching your breath. Just watching your breath. Watching it go in, watching it go out. And not making a deal out of it, not making some kind of problem out of it, just watching your breath go in and out. And it might be good if you're having some real difficulty with that to go take a walk, a brisk walk, a sauntering walk, but it doesn't really matter what the pace of the walk is. What is important is, am I watching my breath? Just get in touch with the breath. If you can walk with your breath, watch your breath, and stay within yourself without conversation with your ego, with your mind, with your emotionality, in other words, to let go of thinking and thinking in a way which causes you to believe that in your thinking, which is really a conversation, you are solving a problem. It'll come to you. If you have a problem, believe me, the answer is there. It is there in all of us, and it just is there. It awakens. It is awakening. If you do that, you will find you have a new mind. This mind is different than the mind, John, you may have had before, where in your thinking, you were thinking about right, wrong, good, bad, like, dislike. This mind is, as I said, a revealer. It is open. It pops, as I like to say. It opens up everything. And soon you start to realize how beautiful, how absolutely beautiful everything in your life is. You start to feel beyond emotion the very essence of what it means to be John and how important it is for you to recognize who you are, not live what John may be worried about or what John is thinking. Now, the last part of your question, is this natural? Well, you know, If I'm doing Greg, the last thing that is natural is meditation. If I'm doing Greg, he doesn't want to do anything other than, I don't know what Greg. I really don't pay much attention to Greg, but whatever it is, whatever Greg wants to do, it isn't going to happen. I don't let my life slip down into that. I really don't. I work very diligently and very consciously not to do a Greg. I like to make fun of him inside a little bit here and there when I hear him pounding away at me and thinking, oh, all he really wants is a grilled cheese sandwich. That's all he really wants. I have all of that. But I don't spend much time in it. It is futile, John, to spend a great deal of time having a conversation with your thinking. It just doesn't, it's like driving your car in a tight little circle around and around. It's like a dog chasing its own tail. There's nothing to gain from it but the conventional mind being, you know, brought out and the same old thoughts doing the same old thing over and over and over and over again. It is best to learn that in the gap, the pause between inhale and exhale, the gap and the pause between one thought and another, in that gap, there is everything that is natural. You are natural. Is this process of breathing natural? Yes. Is meditation natural? Absolutely yes. It is you and I as human beings that have become unnatural. You can do what's natural in your DNA and really mess up your life. You can do what is natural in your genetics and do the same thing. Or you can do what lives deep within your being, your soul. And then you have something very unique. I hope that helped you. Thank you, John, for your beautiful question. I wish you well back there. Please forgive me. Namaste. It's a great question. He's you would have to wonder. People struggle with how they live with their mind. They struggle day and night with this whole thing and their body, and they don't know how to incorporate the two as one and let them work as one. They just don't do it, so they just think, well, it's not natural, but it is. There is something natural about the whole thing. All right, here's the next one from Joy, and she says Southern California. Do we really need spiritual insight? It seems rather strange. It seems rather out of the norm. What do you think, Joy? Well, Joy, I'm a spiritual teacher. Of course I'm going to think it's important. I don't teach this because I want to be right or because I need to be in control or whatever. I don't do that. I teach this because it's the only answer I've ever found in my life that is the alternative to my conventional thinking and my rigid belief system and Greg's ideas. Greg's an idealist. You have to understand that he truly is an idealist. He believes that there is a greater cause for everything and everyone is interested in that cause and we're all working towards it in our own way. Greg is a type of person inside. He wants the direct path. He doesn't want to meander around in silliness and pride and vanity. So, of course, yes, do we really need spiritual insight? Absolutely. But the question is, can we hear it and will we accept it because it has no logic, it has no reasoning, it has no right and wrong, good and bad. It's not dualistic, and our thinking is dualistic all the time. We are constantly in the dualism of good and bad, right and wrong. And because we live in such a manner, in such a way, we make it virtually impossible for us to awaken spiritually and really understand that in insight, there is the compassion to understand why people do what they do, to try to help people who are struggling or maybe in very painful predicaments. We start to see things in the light of how we may serve humankind, which is very important to me. And if you see that, if you understand that, if you're aware of that, then something of the other shore, as I like to call it, can come to me. But if I'm not into that, if I'm not moving into that, I mess things up. I turn things around. I make them backwards. I cause myself great hardships. So, yeah, there is something to all of this. There is the meaning, the substance of life, the causation of living that is very, very valuable. Insight is extremely valuable. And if I'm in my insight, if I'm allowing my insight to have, let's say, presence within me, then all of a sudden I start to have this other mind, as I've talked about with John, a mind that is not in conflict. I cannot, Joy, say this enough to you and John. A mind that is no longer in conflict with itself is a beautiful experience. It is a mind that no longer needs to make people right and people wrong, to make myself right, to make myself wrong. It just doesn't need to happen. And when I'm aware of that inside me, when I'm truly aware of that inside me, that is when something beautiful starts to happen. That's when I start to find, oh, the movement of compassion. That's when the bigger picture enters into me and I realize what I could really do to serve humankind, what I could really do to help. That's all that really matters, is can I help you? The rest does not matter. No matter what anybody says to you, the rest does not matter. Don't let them fool you into believing that anything other than love matters, because nothing other than love matters. Nothing. It is all about the presence of a great love that lives within you. And once I understand that, and once you understand that, that is when the meaning and the significance of compassion and love begin to happen, and our life truly begins to change. We no longer live in the ebb and flow of conventional thoughts that say, well, if you're against me, I hate you. If you're for me, I love you. We don't live in the fear of what will happen to us in the future. Will we have enough for this? Will we have enough for that? We just don't live in that manner. We have to live in the manner of our spirit. And that is not a thing that the human finds natural, or the human finds good, or the human really likes. It's just something we do. We do it because we are it. You are that which you seek. You are the love of this life. You are the meaning and the significance of everything that brings purpose and joy to your living. And when you do that, when you live as such, you live in the way of the heart, as we like to say. And that changes everything about, well, everything. There is nothing more powerful, Joy, than love. Nothing. There is no way for me to say to you and to convey to you through what I say the beauty that is love. It is forgiving. It is giving. It is kind. It exceeds anything you've ever thought or believed in before. It is about oneness. It is about not only seeking oneness, it is about living in the oneness of the all that lives within you. It is an energy separate from our mind that likes to split everything into two pieces, right and wrong, good and bad, duality. So there you are. It is a very simple process, this thing called inner work. It isn't complex. The mind likes to make it complex, likes to confuse us. And as long as we live in that kind of confusion, we will live in the disarray of our own living. And we will make our life a disarray. And you don't need that. No one needs that. I don't need that. Let love live you, dear one. Please forgive me. Namaste. That's a great question. See, I told you, these are smart people. Good questions. Last question comes from Jess, and he lives in Southern California. How long does it take to awaken, Greg? Seems like I've been working on it for a long time. But if I'm honest with you, it's been rather haphazard. Jess. Jess, the straight path is the best. For me, at least. To take no side paths. The problem with people in general, and my students in general, they have a time limit as to how long it should take to awaken. And that time limit may be a year, it may be 2 years, it doesn't matter how many years, or how many months, or how many days. They want it when they want it, when they want it. And if they are honest with themselves, they can see that they're not really working upon themselves, not really. They have no sense of what it is to work on discipline and inner practice. They allow themselves to peek out over here and go over there. They are suspicious. They're angry. They don't do much catharsis. And even when they do, they don't allow that catharsis to really bring out the pooper-roopers and let it go. They don't want to let it go. They feel ashamed of how they are emotionally here and emotionally there. And they never truly, truly let go. So your awakening will be in proportion to how willing you are to let go. To let go of your vanity, your pride. To let go of those thoughts that create duality within you. Your time in your practice should not be spent as an objective to some goal you want to achieve. Our practice is lifelong. Everything we do is a practice. Everything we live is a practice. We live in a practice. And this practice is always unfolding. It's always going somewhere. It's always blooming. It's a blooming affair. So if you're looking at all of this as I will do this and I will do that, and how long do I have to do it before I get my cookie, then your practice is poisoned by your desires. And that's what most people do. The two things that really, really mess up a practice is to have an agenda, you know, and to side path, to go, well, I'm not getting this agenda. It's not doing what I want it to. Maybe I should try something else. And the more you do that, the less you will accomplish. One of my great teachers, great ones in India, said to me, stay with a path for the rest of your life. Stay on one path. Do not deviate from it. But choose a path that offers direct experience. He is right. I don't deviate. I'm not rigid. I don't deviate. I'm disciplined. I know how my mind wants to work. I know how it wants to take a side path. I know how it wants to do, this would be quicker. This would be easier. This makes more sense. None of that is true. It's all an illusion, and it's all Greg's delusion. I don't go there. And if you are wise, you won't either, and you won't take those silly side paths that have nothing to do with the meaning of your practice or sustaining the level of your heart, your compassion. Always live from the sincerity of your heart and always be willing to give. The more you give, the more you will find will be given unto you. Please forgive me. Namaste. great question. If you have a comment, a question, or something, I might be of service to you. Please come to my website at aspire.org, A-S-P-I-R-E.org, O-R-G. And there you will see media. If you pull that down, you'll see Satsang with Suraj. That be me. Just click on it. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Have a beautiful day. I'll be back on the air tomorrow morning. Please forgive, won't you? Namaste.